Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, September 20th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Jennifer Kent's 2014 movie, The Babadook, and we'll present an interview with Jennifer Kent. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
All right, BJ. So The Babadook is celebrating its 10th anniversary. It is back in theaters. So if you're listening to this soon after the episode goes up, you have a chance to see this movie in a theater. September 19th through the 22nd of 2024 is the theatrical run for this re-release. I was really planning to see this movie in a theater because I have never seen it before. And unfortunately, I couldn't get to do that because I'm going on vacation next week. So this is part of an announcement that I want to make here that next week the podcast feed will go dark just for a week. And then I'll be back, I think, the following Monday. So just wanted to let everybody know up top. But yeah, just sort of scrambling and preparing for vacation stuff and doing a bunch of work to make up for that and trying to get all that sorted means that I didn't have the time to go out and actually see this in the theater. The good news is it's also streaming on Netflix. So that's how I finally watched this movie. And before we get into it, BJ, I was curious what your relationship is to this film. I'm sure you saw it a decade ago when it came out, but is this one that you've returned to a bunch, or what did you think about it then? And what do you think about it now?
Yeah, so I did see it when it first came out, and I'm honestly shocked that you somehow missed it because it was such like a phenomenon when it came out because people couldn't stop talking about it. It definitely had this reputation of like scariest movie of the year, all of like the typical, you know, horror figures people look to for taste, like Stephen King. They were like, oh my God, this movie's so scary. So of course I had to see it. And it was very effective. I really loved it. I thought Jennifer Kent was going to be ushering in this like huge wave of women directed horror films, because that was also a big talking point at the time. So that was very exciting to me. And then I didn't revisit it for a little bit until about, I'd say like 4 or 5 years ago. My niece, Roxy, who I do talk about with Jennifer Kent in our interview, you'll hear about her. She became fixated on this movie when she was 6 years old. She was obsessed with it. She dressed like Mr. Babadook for Halloween. I bought her a Babadook t-shirt and she cried. She was so happy. And so I was like, what is going on? Why are kids so into the Babadook? And so I went back and I revisited it, kind of going through that lens, and I had this new appreciation for it, of this being like the new generation's boogeyman, the same way that so many of us, you know, have these, you know, visceral memories of seeing like Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger or whoever on TV and not knowing who they were, not knowing what movies they were in, but knowing that figure scared us and realizing that characters like, you know, Bill Skarsgård, Pennywise the Clown, and the Babadook are those characters for a new generation where even if they haven't seen the movie, they know what those characters are, they know what they look like, and they scare the hell out of them. And that, I think, is very interesting.
That is so fascinating, because this movie, maybe more than any horror movie I've seen in a long time, is so dialed into the parent's perspective, the parent character's perspective, the Amelia character, and like, the movie is kind of about how this mom just needs some space for her sweet but odd little son, you know, like, mm-hmm. just give me a moment for Pete's sake kind of thing. And obviously it's about grief and not being able to really tap into your emotions as well. But like, there's such a, it's so interesting for a kid who is about the age of the kid Sam in this movie to mm-hmm. latch onto this film and view it through that lens and think about this as like a film from the kid's perspective. Because by the end of the movie, and this is full spoilers for Babadook, by the way, if you've not seen the movie, go check it out. By the end of the film, I mean, it's so powerful what happens. It's kind of, to me, this movie is more powerful as a metaphor than it is as a scary movie. And mm-hmm. the moments where Sam is like hugging onto his mom for dear life as the two of them are facing down this creature, which is really kind of her or a big part of her. I guess I can see why a kid would be maybe inspired is the wrong word, but like could relate to that or dial into that and be like, yes, this is a movie about ultimately about like reconciliation and sort of togetherness and the bonds of family being stronger than anything that wants to tear them apart. So I guess I could see it from a kid's perspective. It's just so odd. I never would have thought about that, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's also something to one of the, you know, the thing that defeats the Babadook, so to speak, is empathy and care and like soothing. And like that is, I think, something that a lot of kids are desperate for when their emotions are so big and they don't know what to do with any of them. So they do, you know, kind of what Sam does, which is like freak out all the time. And they don't know how to process their emotions. And a lot of times it's just a cry for like, please hold me, please take care of me, please love me. Even though like they don't fully know how to express that. And then, you know, you have, I think Essie Davis as Amelia is so like, she's so incredible in this movie, but watching her have those very real feelings that I think a lot of parents have where it's like, would they ever actually like kill their child? Of course not. Like they love their children, but sometimes it's like, oh my God, like I can't do this. I can't be a parent. And it's such a taboo thing to discuss. And so to see that sort of presented with like reality, I think in a very weird way, like is also very important because you're seeing that like parents are people and they're vulnerable and they have their own missteps. And I think that not necessarily that like a 6-year-old needs to see like a parent, you know, hallucinating, murdering their kid or anything like that, but realizing like, my parents might be stressed out with us. They might not be able to give me what I want because they're stressed out. I think there's something good in that.
It's kind of like the parents' version of Inside Out in a way, where it like it gives you a framework to think about those ideas that maybe, like you said, were either taboo or like that you didn't really have cinematic. I'm sure there have been movies that deal with the subject matter in the past, but this one was a big deal when it came out and it has remained a big deal for the past 10 years. So I think it's fair to say this is like a very notable movie that tackles that perspective. And so, yeah, I guess it could be providing some adults with like some of that feeling of like, oh, thank God I'm not alone in feeling some of these feelings. I mean, she tells her kid to eat shit at one point, which is just really funny.
I mean, I tell people this story all the time. The first time I ever heard somebody being called a bitch was my dad talking about my, at the time, 6-year-old sister. And to be fair, she was being a bitch, but he said it under his breath thinking no one was around. And I was like, oh, you can do that.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you if you thought this movie was scary, because this film has such a reputation, like you said, for being this really, really scary movie. And I was going into it as kind of a, I don't know, I wouldn't call myself like a horror wimp, but certainly I do not spend as much time in that world as you do. And I was kind of bracing myself going into this thinking like, oh my God, am I going to be like on the edge of my seat or whatever? And like I said, I found it to be more powerful on the metaphorical level than viscerally scary like some of the other movies that I've seen. So I was curious if you had that feeling or if you actually genuinely thought this was, you know, a super scary experience. Because like for me, I was thinking like, okay, when the Babadook first shows up, it's almost like a stop motion kind of thing. It's like skittering around on the roof of or on the ceiling, and then it flies down into Essie Davis's character's mouth, and it just kind of feels, I was like, oh, this movie's like maybe a little sillier than I thought it was going to be going in terms of the character design and the way that the Babadook actually operates. But like as a metaphor, as an idea, a stand-in for grief and the terror and all these terrible feelings that you might feel as a parent, all that stuff was really impactful for me. But what do you think about the scariness, I guess, of this film?
So the problem that affected the Babadook when it came out is that because people were so affected by this movie in terms of what the metaphor means and how it like taps into something that I think is a very dark part of people that they don't want to admit or accept is there, but people don't have the language for that. So of course they say, oh, it's the scariest movie of all time. Like that's what comes out of it. And I think what people think is scary is very subjective, and what being scared means is also subjective, because usually when someone says, oh, it's the scariest movie of all time, what they're meaning is that there are very effective like jump scares or moments that are going to shock you and make you scream out of nowhere, and that's not necessarily like scary to me, if that makes sense. Like that to me is that is a physiological response. That is my adrenaline spiking and giving me like a full body sensory reaction. when I think of movies that are like scary, I think of movies that get under my skin and they stay there. And for that reason, I do think that Babadook is very scary, because what is he if not an entity of like the suppression of emotion? He is the monster that comes from you suppressing your emotions and not allowing yourself to actually give yourself over and feel those things. And it becomes this monster that's going to kill you if you don't actually like deal with it. And that to me is so effective and so scary and like very much gets under my skin. So I do think this movie is very, very scary. Does this movie make me like jump out of my seat? No, because that's not what this movie is. So I think ultimately if people like temper what they are looking for when they hear the phrase like scariest movie ever, that will greatly change how you feel going into the movie.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think it's more of like an existential fear than necessarily like the kind of visceral fear in the moment that happens in a lot of
absolutely.
So, yeah. And kind of, you're talking about like, if you don't deal with this thing, it's going to consume you or whatever. The idea that the character of the Babadook is not vanquished at the end of this movie is really interesting, because a lot of times it is. And in horror films like this, and this is more of like, more about managing it. And that reminds me of Inside Out as well, like the anxiety thing from Inside Out 2. You know, you're not going to completely get rid of this thing. You're just going to have to manage it and figure out how to incorporate it into your life in a healthy way. So yeah, it's just thinking about that idea being explored in a movie like this from 10 years ago, I was just very impressed by that. So I wanted to shout that out real quick. Anything else you want to talk about this movie before we get into your interview?
So in talking about the Babadook, you also have to talk about the way the Babadook has become a piece of like cultural permeation, which is something that I do discuss in my interview with Jennifer Kent, which is that the Babadook is now a gay icon. The Babadook is responsible for a ton of like really famous memes. Like, people love the Babadook in ways outside of it just being an effective horror film. And that I don't think anyone who worked on this movie could have anticipated. And so getting to talk with Jennifer Kent about that, you know, years removed from all of it, was very, very exciting. So if people are curious if we do talk about, you know, the memification of the Babadook, we absolutely do.
Okay, so I will try to, if I can, link to a couple of the specific memes or moments or references that you make in the show notes for this episode, in case people somehow have missed the Katie Dipple picture, for example, or things like that. Right. So I guess before we jump right into it, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into your interview with Jennifer Kent.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, my name is BJ Colangelo. I'm coming to you from Slash Film. How are you doing today?
Good, BJ. How are you?
Oh, just lovely. Very, very excited to talk to you. The Babadook is one of my favorite movies, as is The Nightingale. But, you know, today we're here to celebrate 10 years of The Babadook.
Yeah.
So
it's incredible.
I can't believe it's been 10 years already. Has it flown by for you?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's kind of shocking in a way that it's already 10 years, because it feels like it happened yesterday, you know, it's crazy.
So once audiences first started experiencing The Babadook, there were all of these murmurs about it being the scariest movie of the year. When was it that you realized, oh, this movie is becoming much bigger than I imagined? And how did that make you feel?
I think because I was lucky enough to go with my whole team to Sundance, once we had that first midnight screening, and you start to feel, you know, the reaction and the buzz, that's when we started to know, oh, okay, this is being received well. That was the general feeling. And then just as it got rolled out in different countries and various places, it was, yeah, it was such a rewarding feeling because you just don't know. As a filmmaker, your film could come and go and leave no ripple at all. And even good films, you know, that happens too, very good films. So I think we just were lucky and hit the right point at the right time.
Oh, definitely. And was there an added pressure to any of that when suddenly it's getting all of these accolades and people can't seem to stop talking about it? Did you feel any of that pressure or did you wisely choose to shut it out?
I was saying, you know, bring it up. It's something that, because we'd worked so hard and, you know, made the film on next to nothing. I mean, in terms of film money, it was a very modest budget. And it was quite a struggle to get there. You know, there was a lot of resistance. Make it, horror at the time in Australia, the funding bodies were quite snobbish towards horror. So it was quite a difficult film to get across the line. So by the time that any accolades that were coming, we'd take them. You know, it was a joy.
I love that.
Yeah.
So when my niece was 6 years old, The Babadook was her favorite movie. So much
really?
So that she dressed up like Mr. Babadook for Halloween.
Oh my God. Can you send me that picture?
I absolutely can. And it was to the point where she would correct people. They'd look at her and go, "Oh, you're the Babadook." And she'd be like, "It's Mr. Babadook." So we were all like, "Okay, calm down, Frankenstein's monster. We got it." But this movie has become a core part of her developing a love of horror. And I know she's not alone. A lot of kids know who the Babadook is. They know who Pennywise the Clown is. So this has become a formative text for them. And it's giving them that same feeling that many of us had when we watched John Carpenter or David Lynch for the first time. So how does
What did she... I mean, that's the biggest compliment. But what did she latch onto about it? Did she just love... him. She loved that character.
She loves the character and she loves obviously the visuals of the character is very striking, but I think she had a deep empathy for something being in the shadows and craving the light. And like that really resonated with her. And I think that resonates with a lot of younger viewers as well. And I think also the feeling of being a small child and adults not knowing what to do with you and not understanding you.
Feeling misunderstood. I mean, Sam, you know, a lot of people hate that character. And I feel like, well, he's the one that's actually holding the truth. Right. He's the one that can see what's going on. I mean, to see that and to hear about that, it always delights me because, I mean, I'm a horror fan. You know what it's like. We grow up with seeing these things that are formative for us. I remember, you know, watching Halloween so many times and Nightmare on Elm Street and all these, but then going back through the canon of horror, like even to silent film and watching everything, you know, from then till now, you know, Polanski's horror, I mean, Italian horror, Mexican horror, there's so much that is beautiful out there. And cinematic, it's an incredibly cinematic genre. So, and it deals with myth and fairy tale, which are the deep storytelling elements that affect us as humans, you know. So I'm really thrilled that the film can have that kind of impact on your niece. That's just wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope she gets to go to the cinema to see it.
I think that's definitely happening for her. She's definitely a monster kid. One of her favorite movies this year was Immaculate. And I was like, you're 11. Why are you watching Immaculate? But you know, monster kids come in all forms.
Yeah, exactly. You can tell her I was like that. I was watching films like that at her age.
Oh, so good.
Look at me. I'm normal.
And so looking at kind of the legacy of The Babadook, this is also one of those films that people cite when they look at the quote unquote elevated horror cycle that came in the 2010s into the 2020s. What is your take on its place in that sort of realm? And has that affected how you look back at this film's legacy in that vein?
No, I mean, I think it's just a term that people like to give to films that are not shit, maybe. I mean, elevated horror is kind of like a backhanded compliment, because why do you need to say elevated? Because I understand the term. I guess when it has, there are films that are just purely blood, gore, horror, and nothing else. But I would even argue that most of them have some depth to them too, if you scratch the surface.
Oh, totally.
I feel that I'm just a part of that timeline of horror. So I was greatly influenced by, you know, I mean, masterpieces like The Innocents or The Shining, or, you know, The Exorcist. I mean, or Rosemary's Baby. I mean, there are so many films that influenced me that are actually artful films that I aspired to make something artful as well. I'm happy that there is now a platform where filmmakers who care can make horror films that are distributed properly and that actually people take a risk on, much more than they would have maybe, you know, pre-2014. And I think that's great. You know, it's great for the filmmakers, it's great for the films, and it's fantastic for the audiences who often don't get to see them in the cinema but want to, you know. And it is pretty amazing that horror is one of the sort of remaining genres that does play in cinemas.
Yeah, it's prolific, it's profitable, it's as old as the art form itself. You know, it's never going to die. It refuses to die. And there's something beautiful in that.
Yeah, because it is inherently cinematic, the genre, you know. It's like a dream space, and that's what cinema is great at, you know.
I agree.
Yeah.
And so much of The Babadook deals with suppression and suppressing feelings. And I think that it was a perfect film for 2014. And I'd say in the last decade, culturally, I can only speak for America, but culturally, people have gotten a lot more open about their feelings and their trauma and their pain.
Yeah.
So if you were to make The Babadook now, is there anything about it that you would change to reflect the change in society's feelings of talking about feelings? Or do you think we're still not quite there yet?
I think it's really interesting that you say it's a film about suppression, because I think you've hit the nail on the head. Like, it is, rather than it being about grief, it's about not being able to grieve, actually. And that was my core reason for developing it. I don't know if, I mean, I've changed, so I'd probably make a different film now. But I think I wasn't consciously looking outside and saying what's happening now. It was more a more personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think it would change so much.
Lovely. Yeah. I've got time for a few more questions. So first I'll give you a quick and easy one. Have you seen Katie Dippold's now famous photo when she showed up to a Halloween party dressed as Mr. Babadook and everyone else was there for wine? Okay, good.
I felt like Katie on various occasions.
Good, perfect. It was just very important to me. I was like, there's no way someone has not shown you this, but I will do my journalistic duty and ensure that that is true.
Yes, just sort of forlornly sitting there pretending she doesn't exist.
Yeah. What a mood, what a vibe. And then my last question, also kind of a silly one, but thanks to a category glitch, The Babadook has become an unintentional queer icon. And I'd love to know your thoughts about, you know, the community embracing him, making him one of our own, being Baba Shook, any of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's delightful. One of my favorite shows is Drag Race, and so hearing two drag queens talking about the Babadook is just heaven to me. It's fantastic. Yeah,
I love that so much.
Who cares why it happened? It happened.
Well, exactly. And there were so many of us, myself included, who went, okay, let me sit down and see if I can headcanon this to be, you know.
And did you accurate. Come up with a reason?
Oh, yeah, I did. It's that the thing that my niece was really into it is this being in the darkness and, you know, wanting to be out of that. It's like, that's a very queer feeling.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to face something that's deep inside of you. That's a very queer feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's just so, it was so beautifully organic the way that all happened. And I love it.
Oh, yeah. I owned the Babadook originally, but then I definitely did buy the special one they did where it came in like a rainbow sleeve because I need to. It's just part of this now. Well, thank you so, so much for chatting with me today. This has been such a delightful. Congratulations on 10 incredible years of this film. And I can't wait to go see it again in the theater.
Thank you. Yeah, I encourage everyone to go out. And I'm going to be in New York and LA for some Q&As across the next couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to that.
All right, that was great. Any closing thoughts on the Babadook, BJ? Anything we didn't get to talk about?
I mean, the only thing that I will include is that I feel like the older I get, the more I also completely identify with Sam. And just wanting to sometimes scream into the void because I don't know what else to do with myself. Because I remember, like, Sam gets a lot of crap from people. They're like, oh my God, this annoying kid. But the older I get, the more I'm like, you know what? He's trying to. He doesn't know what he's doing. So I think people are too hard on Sam. Those are my final thoughts on the Babadook.
Justice for Sam. Okay. All right. Well, you can find more about the Babadook at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening. A reminder that we're going to be off all of next week, but we should be back on Monday, September 30th. Thanks for listening. Talk to y'all later.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.